Blog Talk Radio.
This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Doing real good.
We are kicking off a fun week here. We had our friend Thomas Frey on a few weeks ago. And we had wrapped up a series of shows we did talking about his list of big changes that might occur in the next 10 years. And when he was talking, he mentioned that his most popular article of all time was a list of 10 unanswerable questions. So what we thought we would do this week is let's take a couple of cracks at those. We'll do the first five unanswerable questions here this evening, and then on Wednesday we'll do the amazing ones,
right?
Because that's always
right.
what happens on Wednesday, and then Friday. We'll see if we can't. You and I can't come up. We'll be kind of in practice by then, and we'll see if we can't come up with one or two unanswerable questions of our own. What do you think?
Yeah, and I say we just answer these questions and drop the mic and walk away. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we're not even going to tell Tom. Hopefully he's listening, and then he'll know that his questions are something.
I doubt seriously. These questions are indeed probably unanswerable, but we're going to have some fun with it, obviously.
You know, they're the
it's good
obviously
stuff.
The product of an active mind that thinks a lot. You know,
right?
Tom, the guy does some serious thinking. We're going to be having him back on the show. Probably in a couple months to talk about his new book called Epiphany Z, which is going to be a lot of fun talking about that. But, as a little precursor, we don't mind letting him provide us material for as many shows as he wants to. And he just seems to have an almost endless supply of material. So let's do it. Let's see if we can answer the unanswerable. Okay, so question number one, Stephen. I'm gonna let you be the first to answer an unanswerable question here. Why are there exceptions to every rule? Go.
Because the alternative would be boring.
Okay.
I kind of relate this to there's another unanswerable question that we will get to later, Phil.
Yeah.
That's regarding why does time exist, right? And I would say I think the two unanswerable questions are kind of linked. They're kind of related. Without time, you'd have everything happening at once, according to Albert Einstein, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if there weren't exceptions to every rule, then you would know exactly what's going to happen next if you had enough information, and with complete and 100% accuracy, and it would almost be as if there would be no need for time. If you could know everything that was going to happen with unerring accuracy, but we can't. We know that there is sufficient chaos in the universe that even if we had 100% knowledge of the state of things at this instant, we wouldn't be able to say with 100% accuracy what would happen in the next instance because of chaos. And so, why are there exceptions to every rule? That's chaos for you. That's what's the rules can't always apply, although the rules are pretty good. And it's good that we don't have too much chaos, right? If with too much chaos, there'd be no order at all.
If you could never apply a rule to anything, right?
Right.
Yeah, that would not be good.
Well, I don't think life.
It's kind of hard to imagine a
universe like that. Life requires rules to work, right?
Right, right.
And so we couldn't exist in the too chaotic of the universe.
But as soon as you say that, I wonder.
Too much order, we probably couldn't exist either.
Yeah, I wonder. As soon as you say life requires rules to exist, I wonder if life requires rules that have exceptions, right?
Right.
For
example, Phil, how would evolution work if without chaos? It couldn't. I mean, if all my children were exactly like me,
mm-hmm.
you know, then and you know, they followed the rules exactly, and we know exactly what kind of what kind of kids would result from this, then you'd. There would be no transition. There could be no mutation over time, right? So
yeah. So even, you know, it doesn't even have to be chaos. It's just randomness. So you're saying that in a world in which randomness can occur, then no rule can be
100%.
Right? Yeah. Interesting. I think you have to have both.
For life to exist, for sentience to exist, I think you have to have a world, you know, you have to be able to rely on some things most of the time,
mm-hmm.
but you also have to have exceptions too.
Okay, here's how I come about this one, and we may end up in exactly the same place.
That's sort of an anthropomorphic problem, though, isn't it? I mean, it is this way because it has to be this way. It's not a real good, satisfying answer, but I think that's kind of the best we can get.
Yeah, it's not much of an answer, but a lot of our why questions about the universe end up that way. You know, why are we in this very unlikely universe that supports human life? It's like, well, because we wouldn't be asking the question if we weren't. So it's entirely possible that we couldn't ask questions unless there were exceptions to every rule. I looked at this. To me, the answer to this question may be. That there's an exception to every rule because we live in – this is evidence that we live in fundamentally a mathematical construct, that the universe is somehow powered by or made of mathematics. Because within math, we know there's something called Gödel's incompleteness theorems, which basically state that, there's inherent limitations of – I'm reading this off Wikipedia – of every formal axiomatic system, right? Every system always breaks down somewhere. We can't really map within math one thing to another perfectly, or we run into these anomalies within math. Even within math, right? There's exceptions to every rule. You can divide any number by any number except zero, right? And we'll come back to dividing by zero in a few minutes. You know, it's like somehow built in. There has to be things that come up short. So I think that
infinities and zero both are troubling to math.
Well, infinities have their own set of rules, and zero does too. That's right. Their own set of rules that fly in the face of the rules for all the rest of the numbers, including an infinite number of numbers, to give you a little bit of a paradox there. So I wonder if we come up short. Just because it's probably all I'm doing is restating that every rule has an exception. I'm not saying why it happens. I'm just saying because we're made of math, and that doesn't really help at all. See, I guess that's what makes these unanswerable questions, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a reason that he calls them unanswerable. They really kind of are, but it is what it is.
You think you're closing in on an answer, and then you go, "Wait a minute! All I did was restate."
Wait a minute! I've just circled back around to where I started.
Okay, well, maybe number two will help us with this. I think maybe if we can solve number two, then we'll understand why we didn't do very well with the first question. The second question is, why do logic and reason fail to explain that which is true? Now, when I hear that one, Stephen, I immediately think, "Well, that's your chaos question all over again." Is that right?
Well, it sounds like my early love life, actually. But
logic and reason fail to get you a date. I can tell you that.
Yeah, it really does.
That tack never works. Yeah.
it does not help in an argument with a member of the opposite sex either, Phil.
Well, I'm not going there.
Just don't go there. This probably does. But
I don't know. Yeah, you're leading me down a path there.
Don't try to logic or reason way out of things like that. But anyway, Phil, to explain what's true, and we may not be getting – I may be treating this too lightly, Phil. Explain what he means when he asked this question.
Well, let's read this section here. He says, in many scientific circles, the only truths are those that can be explained with logic and reason. Religious people use a different metric, but they too have a way of calibrating their truths with logic and reason. And we did mention that one of the interesting things Tom does here is he tries to stay very neutral on providing scientific versus religious approaches to these questions. He says these are inanswerable either way, right, from either a scientific or religious perspective. So why are logic and reason such miserable tools for explaining the world around us? It's as if the world around us was perfect, and then someone divided by zero, there's that. Everything perfect has a touch of that one secret ingredient known as chaos. So here's your chaos, right? Is order more perfect than chaos? Or is chaos just a higher form of order? How will we ever know if we can't explain it with logic and reason? So, in some ways, it almost feels like this is struggling with the same first question again. But if we have formal systems of figuring things out, why don't they get us to the truth, right? Why don't we come to a, factual understanding of how everything works? And maybe the answer here is, well, we're just not there yet. To swing it back to the phraseology of the first question, all of our rules have exceptions because we're just not very good at formulating rules yet. We're still fairly early on in all of this, and we state our rules way too crudely and bluntly. If we stated them correctly, they wouldn't have exceptions because the exceptions would be built in. The rules would be describing true phenomena rather than kind of crude approximations of them that we currently perceive. And if that's true, then possibly at one point, our logic and reason really will explain everything. We're just not there yet. So or if not our logic and reason, maybe the logic and reason of our robot overlords at some point in the future might be sufficient. What do you think?
I hope I'm not going off on too big of a tangent here, Phil, with this, but it seems to me this may be related to what we're talking about here.
Okay.
Over science over the last 500 years or so has been reductionist in a way, right? If we're looking at the brain, we end up looking at smaller and smaller parts of it. We began looking at the neurons and then, looking lower at the molecular level and everything and keep learning more and more about the smaller and smaller aspects of it. But when it comes to questions of consciousness, we have to know that it's more is happening in the brain that can be explained with a single neuron, correct? I mean, it's there is... It's a case of the sum being way the whole being way more than the sum of its parts, right?
Right.
With consciousness, and maybe that's why logic and reason fail to explain what is true, because our logic and our reason tends to be reductionist in nature. We tend to try to break it down and get to the smallest part and understand it at the smallest level, when you add it all up, it's more than 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. It's 1 + 1 + 1 = 1,000. Because of the way
the network
works together.
We might be on about the same track here, right? I think we could be pretty close to what we're saying. We haven't gotten far enough yet, right?
Yeah.
Or in your case, we've just been looking at the problem wrong. And until we turn that around, until we have a perspective that incorporates the whole question, our logic can't answer it, right? Because we're asking the wrong question to begin with, right? Because we're just looking at the little pieces rather than looking at the whole thing. I'm going to tell you, we've done two of these And I don't think we've answered any unanswerable questions so far. I'm a little
I'm hoping that we're at least in the orbit of the answer, but I don't know.
Yeah, this next one I think we can nail though. Okay. This one I can actually provide an accurate answer to this question. I hope you're ready.
Okay.
Question three is the universe infinite or finite? Or I'll read it in his order. Is the universe finite or infinite? The answer is yes. Thank you. Okay, question four. right, we can answer that one because it is finite or infinite. It's one or the other. This once again, I feel like this is one that. Well, actually, I'm not sure you could ever answer it. How would you ever know for sure it is? And how would you ever know for sure it's not? Let's imagine how you would know it's not, right? You would know it's not because you got to the edge, right? You got to the end. You come to a brick wall, right? And it's like, okay, no more universe beyond this point. But that doesn't make any sense, right? Because what's beyond the wall, right? If we live in one of these pure curved space-time, you know, multi-dimensional things, and you just keep going in the same direction and you end up where you were, even that just means we're in some kind of bubble, and we don't know what the bubble's floating in, right? So I don't know how you could ever know it's not, but through observation, I don't know how you could ever know that it is, because you couldn't observe
if we're talking about traveling through three-dimensional space to get to the next universe, I just don't think it's going to work that way, because if you're in three-dimensional space, you're still in this universe. So I don't think you can get in a spaceship and fly over to the next universe, because, you know, you're talking about a trip through three-dimensional space, which is this universe. So,
but all we know in this universe is the we call the what do you call that? The I can't think of the term. The space telescope, the Hubble. Wave we're in, right? We call that the universe, but it may not be the whole thing, right? There could be stuff in three-dimensional space outside of the boundaries that we think of as the end of the universe. We don't know because we can't get out there. But even if what you're saying is true, even if all three-dimensional space is in, you know, encompassed in what we call the you know, what's occurred since the Big Bang, right? The quote-unquote universe, if you will. What, you know, let me put air quotes around the word universe. That's fun. We still don't know what it's sitting in, right? If it's sitting in a bigger three-dimensional space or a four-dimensional space or something like that, even if that's a bubble you can't get out of, you know, the question is, what's past the bubble, right? I assume whatever it is, there's an infinite amount of it, but that's only an assumption. You can't know. Right.
Yeah.
You can't know that this is all there is, and you can't know if there's anything past there. And it's like it's an unanswerable question or something. Jeez, I don't even know how we're dealing with it.
Well, it's really, really big. We can say that about it, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's just looking at it, the visible universe, which is a tiny, tiny fraction that we understand of the entire universe. So. Our light sphere is a tiny fraction of what the entire universe is. So,
do you remember a movie called Roxanne? Steve Martin movie from the 80s. Daryl Hannah. She's an astronomer. He's this fireman. He's got a big nose, but beside the point. But
it was a classic story of some sort that was put in modern times.
Yeah, it's Cyrano de Bergerac in modern times. But anyway, there's a great line in there. She's an astronomer. And she says to him at one point, she says, do you have any idea how many objects there are out there? And he goes, well, I know it's more than 50. you know, I think we'll just let Steve Martin's answer to her question be the answer to, is the universe finite or infinite? I think it's about as close as we can come.
It's more than 50.
Yeah, it's more than 50. Okay, number four, finally, one I'm pretty sure you can answer, Stephen. Why does anything exist, Gil?
Another anthropomorphic answer, I'm afraid. It has to, or we wouldn't be here asking. But, you know, it's That's one that I spent some time talking about in a lengthy blog post back when we first started the Speculist. Do you recall that?
Yeah. But I don't remember.
And basically, I ended up with basically saying that this is the end of it says, you know, this is a question that both scientists and the religious minded run up against the same brick wall with. You know, I mean,
right.
A scientist cannot answer with science why anything should exist. You know, why, and it would seem to me that it's more difficult for there to be something over nothing. But that's maybe a failure of my imagination. But if it's either nothing or something, how, you know, why should there be something over nothing when nothing would seem to be the easier thing, right?
Right.
The religious would say, well, you know, God did it. Well, okay, tell me about God. What's his origin?
Yeah. Why does God exist?
Is what a skeptic would answer to that. So
it's a fair question, though, right? I mean, it is a fair question, right? Why does God exist? If you're asking why things exist, I mean, you're allowed to ask that once God's brought into the discussion. And the answer you get is, well, God exists eternally, right? God.
Yeah, because he does. The question then becomes,
yeah, if you can have something existing eternally, then you could just have the universe existing eternally, the skeptic will say. And you haven't, you know, all you've done is defined a bottom layer that.
you end up with both the skeptic and the religious person throwing rocks at each other when they're actually faced with the same exact problem. And they have more in common with this problem, at least, than either would be willing to admit, it would seem. So,
okay, why does
anything exist? Because it has to, is the best answer I can give.
Okay, I've got an alternative, and this is my most, you know, way out there man theory of anything since I was probably a college freshman. All right, but I think a lot about these, Max Tegmark style multiverses. You know, we talk about that once in a while. This this vast proliferation of possible universes. This idea of that every decision you make is spawning off quantum universes, and that might exist on top of all the possible mathematical universes that could be defined, and that could all be sitting in a place where, in fact, in three-dimensional space, all the universes are sitting there. So it's just like one pile of infinite universes on top of another pile of infinite universes. And you come to this idea, it's like, okay, so what if it's this? What if every possible thing that could exist does? All right, so it's not why does anything exist? It's why does everything exist? But if you looked at it from the right point of view, this is the hard part. Okay, get ready. Having absolutely everything that possibly exists is identical from the right perspective to absolutely nothing existing. Okay, because all the positives and all the negatives they cancel each other out. So maybe the answer to why does anything exist is that nothing exists, because nothing existing is the same as everything existing, and everything exists. There you go. It's probably just worth telling.
You're talking about the relationship between the infinite and zero again, right? I mean,
I think so. Yes.
They have the two have troubling implications and a relationship to one another.
You know what's great about that whole thing, that little speech I just made? When I was thinking it, it sounded like I swear there's an idea there. But when I say it out loud, it just sounds like complete nonsense.
You know, it's both a work of impenetrable genius and the mutterings of a moron at the same time.
There you go. That's my point. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
I actually like that answer, and that's pretty good. I think we should drop the mic and walk away at that point. I really do.
Well, we should, but we got one more we got to do before Wednesday.
Yeah.
So And okay. And that is, why does time exist? Which you may have already answered, but I want to let me take a real quick crack at time from the perspective I just said. What if, assuming that every possible universe exists, the real mystery then is not why any particular thing exists or any particular quality or property exists, but ultimately the question is, why does subjective experience exist, right? Why are we thinking about this? And, you know, why are we having this moment-to-moment-to-moment experience? And it actually, frustratingly, comes back to exactly what you've already said about it, which is that if we weren't, okay, if time didn't exist, right, if I wasn't looking at the clock going, uh-oh, we got 3 minutes, right, if we weren't in a context that provided that subjective moment-to-moment, second-to-second experience, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So it's
right.
It's
got to have it. It's got to have it, or it wouldn't be, you know. And imagine a universe where it doesn't work that way. Well, I don't know that there would be any sentience in that universe to experience it. Therefore, you know, we have to be in a universe that has this, and therefore we do.
Right.
So, you know.
Because the alternative is, you can say, well, okay, well, imagine a universe where time doesn't exist. Okay. I'm thinking about it. All right. Is anyone there? Yes, I'm there. I'm there in that universe where time exists. So what am I doing? Well, I'm thinking. How does that work? Well, it's a subjective experience of moving forward in time, right?
Yeah.
Anywhere I go, I'm going to bring time with me, right?
Right.
Either I'm not there or there's time there, right?
Right.
So, you know, time exists.
We are creatures that need the time, right?
Well,
there was a fun Doctor Who episode. I don't know if it's fun or frustrating, depending on how you look at it, where everything was happening at the same time. You know, it was World War II was going on, and there was laser battles, and dinosaurs were roaming the streets, and it was, you know, and you know, it's a complete
awesome.
Breakdown of time, brought about, no doubt, by some mistake that, you know, that the Doctor had made.
The Doctor
right?
made, yeah.
Yeah, and
well,
so, you know, it was an episode that was a lot of fun, but it absolutely doesn't work. You know, I mean, the episode, it was too chaotic for the episode to make much sense.
Right.
And so really what you end up with is just a bunch of visual impressions of that rather than any plot that I could explain in the show. You know, does that make sense? So you have to
absolutely.
Have time for things to make sense.
There has to be a string of stuff, you know. Otherwise,
and causality. You know, if I go to the store and insult somebody in the store, they're probably not going to respond well to that, and you know, and therefore I don't get good service at the store. You know, but things like that. There has to be causal relationships, and that has to exist within a time frame. And
right. And that goes back to your chaos thing. If there's not causal relationships, you could just have random events, but we can't conceive of them. And we can't exist in that universe because our subjective experience is one of linear time.
And causality.
Guess what? Speaking of linear time.
With chaos thrown in.
We're out of it. So
yeah, we are out of time.
We've run out of linear time. We're going to come back on Wednesday, and we're going to be just as inadequate at answering the next five of these questions. So I hope you will all be able to join us. This has been actually quite a bit of fun. All I can promise is while the answers will be no more complete or accurate, they will be amazing. So you've got that to look forward to, everyone. Thanks for being with us. Stephen, great talking with you. And until next time, live to see it.